Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life, and today we are talking about rethinking social justice.
What's up, Bethany? Welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
What's up, Chris? Welcome back. Oh, wait, you were here last time.
I was
time.
Here, yeah.
It was Dusty that wasn't here.
I was Dusty was gone.
Hey, we're so what we're doing for the next couple podcasts is we're continuing to press forward some of the themes from James K. Smith's book, Awaiting the King, which we said in the last podcast is a really intelligent book, but a fairly complex book. And so there's a need to sort of flesh out some of the conversations he's starting. And I thought this one was a helpful conversation in light of some recent hubbub that took place, I think, in the Twitter sphere. Chris, is that kind of where the hubbub took place?
Isn't that where everything?
That's kind of where the world
takes place now. Yeah,
there's no real world. There's only the Twitter sphere.
It's on Twitter.
Yeah.
If you pay attention, you might have seen John MacArthur and some other folks came out with this statement on social justice that basically said, "Hey, the language of social justice is bad. We shouldn't use that." I don't know. I didn't read this. You read the statement.
I mean, it was pretty straightforward, kind of boilerplate.
Boilerplate. You know, for years, there's sort of been concern in conservative Christian circles that, hey, sometimes the language of social justice ends up just being a cloak for like various kinds of liberalism. It sounded like that's kind of the argument they were making. And that, of course, got strong pushback from some Christians who are very concerned about social justice, who are offended by that statement. So there's this big flashpoint hubbub. And for days and days, people on my Twitter feed were arguing about that. And I just felt joyful to just stay above the fray and say, I'm not even going to read that because I don't, that just sounds like an argument I don't need to have. However, what's interesting about that whole sort of hubbub is that it strikes me that Jamie Smith says something in his book that I think explains a little bit of what's going on there, meaning I think that sometimes people are talking past each other on issues of social justice. And Jamie's book, as he frames out sort of a kingdom of God vision for the world, he taps this, he sort of puts his thumb on some of our social justice conversations and says, hey, there's some places that we need to like take stock of how we're talking about this here. And let me read the quote from his book that I think tees up this podcast and sort of sets up the conversation we want to have. This is from page 89 of Awaiting the King. We need to consider how we pursue justice. When we naturalize shalom, it is no longer shalom. For the New Jerusalem is not a product of our bottom-up efforts as if it were constructed by us. The New Jerusalem descends from heaven. And the light of a holy city is not a natural accomplishment, but is the light radiating from the glory of the risen conquering Lamb. The holistic affirmation of the goodness of creation and the importance of this worldly justice is not a substitute for heaven, as if the holistic gospel were a sanctified way to learn to be a naturalist. Shalom is not biblical language for progressivist social amelioration. Shalom is a Christ-haunted call to long for kingdom come. You can hear what Jamie's doing there as he's poking a little bit at the ways that some of our passion for social justice can start to feel like a program of progressivist social amelioration. It's a way, it's sort of saying, if we just worked harder, we could make this world like the kingdom of God. And though I don't think that's actually what anyone probably thinks, at least the people who are coming from biblical convictions, I can see the language sort of tends in that direction. And some of the current social justice conversation has that smell to it. I think that what Jamie's arguing for here is that a Christian approach to social justice has to be Christological. It has to have Christ in it. It has to need his life, death, and resurrection, and it has to need his kingdom. And it has to understand that the New Jerusalem comes down out of heaven. And when Christian social justice-minded folks and non-Christian social justice-minded folks start sounding a lot alike so that I can't really tell the difference between them, I start to get a little itchy. And that's how I felt a little bit reading my Twitter feed in recent weeks. Sort of, okay, I think we're caring about things we should be caring about. But oftentimes, Christian voices in this conversation can start to sound a lot like any progressive person out there on Twitter who's saying similar things. In other words, there's not a Christological specificity to how we're thinking about social justice and mercy in the world. And so I want to argue, and I think that I want to use that quote from Jamie Smith to tee up the conversation of that what we need in the church and what I long for our listeners to be and for us to be are Christians who care deeply about issues of social justice. So we do care about the needs of the world, and we've got the biblical wisdom and gospel fluency to care about them and talk about them in a distinct way rather than just, so let me frame it one other way just that might be helpful. I think Jamie, a week or two ago when we had him on the podcast, talked about how Christians sometimes, when it comes to culture, like the movies and the art and the music we make, we sort of just like take what the culture is doing and slap Jesus on it, right? So it's like, hey, here's the music the culture likes right now. Let's just make the same tunes, but put Jesus lyrics in them. And he called it sort of like a Jesusified culture, you know, a Jesusified version of pop culture. I think we can make the same mistake in social justice world where we just take a, what's the cause the culture is nervous about right now? Okay, great. Let's take that and slap Jesus on it and say, Jesus cares about that too, right? And when we do that, I think it's not bad, but it's incomplete because we're not pressing a Christologically focused answer to that question. The example I have that's probably cliche is, I'm using an example that's purposefully like 3 or 4 months ago so that we can sort of like be like, okay, there's, you know, hopefully everybody's not mad about it anymore. And we've sort of, I think as a society, kind of calmed down and figured it out a little bit. But remember,
Russia?
Not that one.
Oh, okay.
That one is still alive, Tommy. Oh, okay. Everybody's still mad about Russia and Putin and, you know, Donald Trump.
Kavanaugh. He's going to
Kavanaugh.
Yeah. No, that's even more alive.
We're not too soon.
I'm
too
talking
soon.
About, guys, the whole hubbub over, you know, we shouldn't separate families at the border, right? Which got a lot of traction a few months ago. What's interesting to me about that is I read some articles in World Magazine and in The Atlantic that made the case, hey, this actually isn't a new policy. We've been doing this for multiple presidents. Like, it's actually just sort of the way immigrations and customs enforcement does things. It's not new. What is new is, one, it's an easy wedge issue against Trump, and two, Trump is the kind of person who takes an issue like that and ramps it up to 11 and makes it a fight. And so it just became this huge flashpoint of like, why are we doing this? And what I saw in that conversation was, one, a lot of people got really animated about the cause of separating families at the border without doing the work to go, how long have we been doing this? And is, you know, what's the policy here? And had they read that, they would have been like, oh, this isn't actually a Trump thing. This might be this is a broader immigration. If I care about this issue, I should care about it as a broader immigration issue, not why is Trump such a jerk and making kids go away from their parents at the border. But the other thing I noticed is that a lot of Christians were hopping on and just like, almost like retweeting, like, hey, this is a justice issue. We should care about this. This isn't okay, which I would agree. Hey, let's not separate kids from their families. But there was no gospel perspective brought to that question. It was just sort of like here's a tweet from some columnist or some journalist or some activist. Yes, I agree with this. Christians should care about this. We weren't asking the question, hey, how would the gospel critique this policy? If this policy needs to be changed, how would the gospel ask that we change it using the levers that we actually have, which are policy and, you know, law and diplomacy, rather than just let's get animated about it for a few days and tweet about it and then go back to our lives, which is kind of what I feel like Christians do sometimes. Like, hey, we should fix this. Somebody should fix this. Doggone it, that's unjust. And they're like, oh, never mind. I found a really great new recipe on Pinterest that I want to try out. Like, it's just, you know, it's just like we get agitated about something for 5 minutes and it's like, oh, okay, I said my piece about that and I feel good about having contributed something to the conversation. But really, that's not much of a contribution. I think what I'm provoked by is Jamie Smith arguing, hey, how does a recapturing of the idea of heaven affect how we should engage topics of social justice? How does realizing this whole thing isn't getting fully and finally sorted out until the new heavens and the new earth, how does that give us an appropriate sort of concern and gospel vision for social change and caring about issues in society.
That last sentence that you read, Bob, is provoking to me. Shalom is a Christ-haunted call to long for kingdom come. Christ-haunted kind of gives me this impression that we long for the kingdom. We want to see the kingdom of God brought to bear in our world. Like we live out kingdom principles. We want to see kingdom ethic form and shape society. But there's always this sort of sense of disappointment. I don't know if that's the right term, but that it's almost something we're never going to be able to like firmly solidify and hold in our world because it's not the kingdom. Heaven hasn't descended yet. And so we're always sort of seeing glimpses and we get excited about where we see those glimpses, but then there's also going to be room for disappointment. And so as I'm thinking through that, I'm wondering if some of the push in social justice directions that we would probably say we're uncomfortable with is trying to eliminate the disappointment we feel, or trying to eliminate the areas where we see, hey, there's a problem here and we're going to do our darndest to get rid of that, to the point where we will try every method. I don't know if that may be an overstatement, but there's this sense where we cannot live with disappointment, that this isn't going to be fully realized in our day. And so we either swing to one in the one extreme of, well, it's not going to happen, and so we're just going to wait till Jesus comes back, or we swing to, I'm going to try so hard and I'm just going to get angry because it's never going to actually happen. And so this phrase Christ haunted seems to present perhaps a third way to step into this that looks at this as, hey, we still need to be proactive in some ways, but at the same time, we're not going to get there, and so we have to be okay with that, and that should temper our methodology. So these are kind of just newly formed thoughts, but that's something that kind of was stirring based on that quote. And so is that kind of along the lines of maybe what he's getting at, or...
I don't want to speak for him. I don't know what he's getting at, but I think as I read that quote, yeah, it feels to me like he's saying, hey, the gospel is kind of a third way approach here to your standard liberal and conservative categories. Your standard liberal categories are, we're progressives, we need to fix this problem now, let's marshal the levers of government to fix it, and doggone it, if you don't want to fix it now or yesterday, something's wrong with you, and let's throw everything at it. Conservatives conservative approach is tends to be a little more, you know, yeah, it's a problem, but there's not much we can do about it. And so, you know, let's empower your local charity, something like that, you know? And yeah, it feels like the gospel is to your point, embraces both the call and the disappointment, right? The mandate and the disappointment that, hey, we should care about justice and mercy in the world, but we also have to embrace some amount of our limitations. I don't know. I'm curious your thoughts, Bethany, because I know you hang out on the Twitters some. And but to go back to that immigration question, right? I think like, well, I want to be grieved that families get separated at the border, because I think if I was trying to flee a country and enter a country with my kids, I would not want to get separated from them, and that would be concerning to me. So I want to put myself in the shoes of the person that we're talking about and say, well, that's not good. But I also want to put myself in the shoes of the scope of that problem. Like, we're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of people and a bunch of bureaucratic institutions that have to work together, like Immigration and Customs and Border Patrol and the process of citizenship and processing new immigrants and those kinds of things. And so just saying there's a certain like healthy, I think, disappointment that just says, maybe what I'm called to do with that is pray, lament, weep with those who weep, and realize like that's kind of an intractable problem that's not going to get solved overnight or in a month or maybe in a year. And it's going to take some Christians in places of power working for a long time on various ways to deal with that, you know? And it just doesn't feel like that kind of patience is present. And maybe
that's why.
But also that patience feels passive, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
To a certain degree.
I feel like everything on social media is so reactive. Like, as soon as something
as soon as some policy lands, we have to have an idea.
We have to take a side.
Yeah, we have to take a side. And yeah, being patient and thinking through it with a gospel lens takes some time. And there's just, I don't know, it's like the more time you take, it's like you're just, your silence is saying that you are on the other side. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a rally tonight, so you got to hurry up and pick.
Hey, I got a text from Trump today. Did you guys get a text from Trump today?
The presidential alert.
Your number?
There was
the presidential alert. Yeah, I got that.
Something to say.
Test of the emergency broadcast system.
Well, then there was a text that says there's a rally in Council Bluffs today.
I didn't get that one, Chris.
Oh, maybe that was a prank.
You must be on the FBI list or something.
You're in Bellevue. So.
Yes, I'm in Bellevue. Yes.
That's right.
Yes. But I think that's what I'm getting at, I think, in the sense of if you take the immigration issue and I completely agree, like separating families, that's a terrible, horrible situation to be in. But there seems to also be to solve the issue, quote unquote, solve the issue seems so incredibly complex that the simple answers just don't do it justice. Like you can't just say, let him come through and that's the end of the story. Like it's not separate families or let them come through. Like sometimes it gets reduced to that. And if you were to really look at, okay, if we kind of had this like hypothetical 100% foolproof answer to the situation, you have to dig all the way back into cultures and history and wars and all the complex problems that create these immigration issues that don't have easy answers to them. And would require decades, if not centuries, to address. And that takes a kind of patience that does require a good category for mourning and a good category for just realizing I can't do immediate, there's no immediate fixes. And I just don't think we're comfortable living there. And so that's where, again, that Christ-haunted longing, like there has to be, if we try to eliminate the longing for the kingdom by trying to fix all the problems, then we run into problems. So that's where I'm trying to wrestle this out of what does it look like to be proactive and care and engaged, but also maintain a sense of Christ-haunted longing for the kingdom.
It feels like another way to say it is to say the gospel should have a prophetic voice to both left and right.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I see or feel sometimes is that people on the right are co-opting the gospel to attack the left, mm-hmm. and people on the left are co-opting the gospel to attack the right. And I don't hear enough people sort of offering points of prophetic critique to both. And so to your point, Bethany, I sort of feel like there's like liberal Christian Twitter and conservative Christian Twitter, and they're both saying, take our side, and yell at those other people. And very few people, I think, who are saying, hey, here's a critique of both. Here's where the gospel sort of comes in the middle and says, hey, you guys need to be challenged here and you need to be challenged here. And neither one is exactly right. And so here's a way of, and what I was really intrigued by is World Magazine, which is one of my favorite publications because they're very committed to like journalistic integrity. They just sent some reporters down to McAllen, Texas, or one of the border towns, and basically said, hey, where instead of like going and interviewing some kid in New York and saying, oh, I heard you got separated at the border from your parents, talk about how you feel, you know, like trying to get some 12-year-old to, they just went down to the border and just like said, talk to some immigration and customs officials down there. And those people basically said, hey, we're just doing our job. Like we're doing the same thing we've been doing for a decade, which is processing people who come. And when they come as a family, there's certain protocols we go through. And yeah, sometimes they get separated and here's the reasons for that. And actually they're usually not the reasons that people are like trumpeting and highlighting in the media. Oftentimes it's for the protection of the kids because we don't want to incarcerate them with a bunch of adults who we don't know what might happen. Like mm-hmm. there actually are good reasons why that policy mm-hmm. might be in place. And it just gave me an ability to step back and go, oh, there's some bigger questions here that no one seems to sort of be putting on the table and saying, hey, actually, let's not just say, don't separate families. Let's ask, why does that happen in the first place? What elements of that are good and necessary? What aspects of that are bad and just efficient but not kind, right? Not redemptive. Yeah, and so it felt like all of those, that gospel providing a point of prophetic critique to both is where I think gospel Christians need to land. And so that means we would care about issues of justice, but we would care about them with a certain level of nuance and a little more of a long-term patient perspective that says, hey, this needs to be addressed. And to address it, man, it's going to take a lot of people diving in over the long haul to do it. One place I think we've seen that happen well is with Safe Families, which is a national thing. It's not local, but we've had the privilege of being part of it locally. And it's basically somebody saying, hey, kids in foster care are vulnerable. And so let's as the church, try to do something to help tackle that problem. Here's a thing we can do that, gosh, people are crying out for help here. Here's a way to fix it. Mm-hmm. I like solutions like that because they strike me as like, hey, that's a gospel third way. We're not saying, how come any kid is in foster care? Let's fix it all. You know, let's make kingdom come now.
Yeah.
But we're also not saying, well, that's just the screwed up world we live in, and oh, well, Jesus will come back and fix it. We're saying, hey, there actually is a way we can mobilize God's people to get involved in this in a way that actually pushes the ball forward in a healthier way with sort of solving a widespread social problem.
This makes the argument too, again, for the acting locally, because if you're acting directly in your context with the people you are in community with, one, it gives you space to be proactive, but also connecting you to a larger issue and having to recognize, hey, this is a small attempt to bring the light of the gospel to a very, very big problem. And so I see the gospel being brought to bear in a particular situation, but I'm also aware of the bigness of it. And so there I start to long and say, Lord, I know that this isn't going to eradicate it. I know only you can do it, but we're trying to show your love here while being mourning over the bigness of it and the fact that I can't fix it. And we need heaven to come to earth before this gets fixed. And so the local aspect in many ways helps us to live in that tension in I think some healthy ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested, listeners, you can give us some feedback and let us know your thoughts on this whole question of the gospel approach to social justice. Again, Jamie Smith's critique is this worldly justice is not a substitute for heaven. Shalom is a Christ-haunted call to long for kingdom come. What do you see happening out there in the social media world especially, and where does this conversation need to be challenged and more nuanced to do justice to sort of the fullness of the gospel here? Or where do you feel like we're not tackling the question deeply enough or fully enough? Maybe there's ways we are not thinking through this in the way that we should be, or in a way that's helpful. And so I'd love to hear from you on your thoughts. So this is one of those where you can hit us up with an email, and we'll sort of like, we'll probably have an episode in the future where we just tackle some sort of like listener comments or listener feedback. Hey, here's something someone said about a recent podcast that adds a helpful piece of nuance or frames up a new question. In any case, our longing is for Christians to care about issues of justice, but to care about them in a thoughtful and careful way, and to avoid the sort of, what you said, Bethany, the sort of rush to alarmism or the rush to take a side. Because increasingly, that's the world we live in, is like, hey, take a side. And I retweeted something from Alan Noble, who's a Christian professor and a thoughtful guy. And it was like this sarcastic tweet that basically said, tweet about it now. And if you don't tweet about it now, you don't care about it. And it proves that you're a bad person, basically. And so that like, there's this world we live in where like, if you don't like chime in somehow, you must be a hater, or you must not care, or you must not have God's perspective on this. I think it's wise for Christians to express ourselves, but in ways that are measured, thoughtful, prayerful. And I guess I want to always ask myself this question: have I prayed about this at all? if I'm going to tweet about it, have I prayed about it? Have I brought it before the Lord? Have I taken a moment to say, Lord, how do you want me to feel about this problem, and how do I want to see you work and act in this situation?
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from our listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send us an email at podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.